Okay. Hello and welcome back to Rising Star Festival. I'm very pleased to introduce our guest, singer, songwriter and producer, Rhys Davis. Hello, Rhys.
Good to be here.
Excellent. Well, just to give some background, I first met Rhys back in the 1990s, I think, when you were frontman for a Swansea Unlimited Dream Company, and I managed to play bass at a few gigs with yourself. Always original songs, even then. That was many years ago, and you've done many things recently. Last year, a 10-track album, new tracks this year. Tell us a bit about the time in between.
Okay, well, so when you were in the band, we used to go through bassists, didn't we? And I think you were the second longest sort of lasting one. And you played a fretless bass, if memory serves.
Yeah, Paul was in the band before me.
Oh, God.
A number of other bassists as well.
Yeah.
I believe James Hollingsworth.
James Hollingsworth, yeah, he played for a bit. That would have been 91, something like that. I moved to London. I got a job at Goldsmiths College as a sound technician academic in the theatre department. So I spent the 1990s in Goldsmiths College doing drama. And if you couldn't be at Goldsmiths in the 60s, then be at Goldsmiths in the 90s, because it was a wild time. Mm. It was all that whole Blur thing was going on, and it was very exciting to be in Southeast London at the time. And so I did that for a bit. And then one day, a friend of mine rang me up, and he worked in telly, and he said, "Can you write a theme tune really, really quickly? We need it 37 seconds long, and it needs to sound exactly like this, only not." In those days, we didn't have internet so much, so a courier biked over the introductory sequence. It was A to Z of football, and I just whipped up this track. It was really easy. I just found the same drum loop that the original thing that had been edited to had been done, put a slightly different bass line on, and sent it back, and they used it, and then from that point on, I was the go-to guy for these producers, and I started writing music for telly, and I left Goldsmiths and did that full-time for a while, and then...
Just to say that with these sort of tracks, you were recreating them, but tweaking them and bringing a different twist to them. But, sorry, go on.
Well, back in the day, editors, when they were doing, and this is particularly for sports videos, would get an established kind of track, and it would always be... And they would then edit the opening sequence to that track. But the producers then wouldn't want to pay royalties to that commercial track every time it was broadcast on television. So they would contact early career composers like me and say, "Can you make this as close to this as possible? So all the edit points are hit, it's the same beats per minute, and then we'll pay you £7,000 buyout." And that's what I did. And because the original dance track would have used a drum loop, and there were very few of those sort of CDs in those days, I would find the exact drum loop that they'd used on a commercial sample CD. And then I'd do a slightly different bass line and add a few sound effects. I was popular because I was a twofer, because I'm a sound designer. So I was able to do the sound effects of, you know, chrome balls spinning in the air and then bursting into tickets and all that kind of stuff. So I was good at creating sounds for images that didn't exist in the real world. So I was a kind of twofer. So I was quite successful until these planes crashed into the Twin Towers and the industry died for a couple of years because America wasn't interested in buying any of the stuff. I was working on a 13-part documentary series at the time called History of Football, The Beautiful Game, which you could still buy on Amazon. I still get a little dribble of royalties every now and again. And so I went back into education, and since then I've been sort of doing music really for as a hobby. I've not been a commercial composer, and therapy, music's therapy for me now, you know. I'll be 60 next year, so, you know, never wanted to be a pop star. Oh yeah, what you can hear in the background is Barney, the golden retriever, my sister's dog, wanting me to throw a ball. And let me just throw him out, because he's doing all the time now, so I'll just throw him out. Sorry about that. Okay, so he's gone now.
I wondered if it was one of your sound effects.
I might record him. He's now scraping the door. You wanted to talk about Be Still My Broken Heart, isn't it?
Yes.
That was what I used to write when I was writing for telly, particularly when I was writing for sort of more than just opening, or, you know, when I was writing bubbles and underscores and stuff like that. So what I would do, I'd do a theme, I'd find my theme, and then I'd do a load of different variations across about 5 to 10 minutes. So I'd go into a ska bit, and I'd go into a techno bit, and I'd go into a house bit, all on that theme, and I could give that then to the editor. And the editor, the picture editor, could then cut in. So I would have different versions of the same theme that they could then use in different parts of the documentary series. And so I used to do that a lot. I had a neighbour, I still have a neighbour, called Michelle. And I was walking, we both got dogs, so we were walking our dogs together, and she was showing me spikes on her heartbeat chart. And they were spiking up. She was wondering what the hell was going on. And it turned out she had a leaky heart valve. I suddenly thought, well, why didn't I do a little dance track as a joke, you know, just to see if I can revive those kind of commercial muscles. And I found this sound. I thought, oh, that's the heart spiking sound. And I just then did what I used to do, you know, 20 years ago, and did variations across that theme. And that was the result of that track. I just wanted to see whether I could still do that kind of writing.
Wow. Well, let's have a stop now.
Still my broken heart.
Argentinian football team, and that would have to work in, you know, sequences from 1930, sequences in 1984, when, you know, all the times they won World Cups, basically, and so it had to be different type of genre, but with the same theme, and so that's what that was really. I mean, the most fun I had was the kind of laid back, kind of slightly urban kind of version later on, but it was originally called Mickey's Heart because I just did it as a joke for her. And I thought, I listened to it, I thought, actually, that's not bad. So then I changed it and I put that kind of vocal bit on with a vocoder. And I thought, there we go. And I'd had the biggest response. All the tracks, all the bloody tracks I put on Facebook. The one that I just kind of dashed off as a joke, I had the most positive response. It was gratifying, but it pissed me off as well.
I really like the sort of breathy vocals. And I was going to try and put you on the spot. Did you use a vocoder or a harmonizer?
Oh, yeah, I used a vocoder. That's all vocoded, that is. I had the vocal track, and I sidechained it, and I'd muted the original vocal track, so it is just the vocoder. I wanted it to sound more vocodery than I could get it, actually. I wanted it to sound more kind of 70s vocoder, but I got an Isotope Vocoder 2 or something like that. I wanted it to sound fake. I could have done the harmonies. You know, I do harmonies all the time. But I wanted it to sound fake.
But one great place for people to hear this is on Spotify, obviously. And then we're very pleased to be able to play some of your tracks on Resonant Radio. And here at Rising Star Festival, we're just really thankful to you know, just to have a very brief chat. I've got so much more to ask you, Reese.
Go ahead.
You know, how long do other tracks take? You said this one in particular was, you know, just off the cuff, you almost said, but you know, some of your other tracks must take quite a while as well. I'd like to really focus just for a minute on Win, Lose or Die.
Oh, right, okay, yeah, go on.
Well, just to introduce people, and you've got to go and check this track out, it just evokes the shady underworld of James Bond.
Ship has sailed. The aeroplane grounded, the train derailed. But I don't hold a grudge, for the world's been so fast, and nothing we build is destined to last. To see if blame is apportion, it falls upon me. Except for you, baby, yes, I'm looking at you. You tore me asunder, a blood-broken coup. Searching for meaning on a liminal beach, seeking no answers beyond easy reach. We lose our compensated, the outcome curtailed. But I don't hold a grudge, for the world turns so fast that nothing we build is fated to last. Can't sing of love, for I'm not out of mode. There's ice in the ditches and blood on the road. Win, lose or die. Win, lose or die. Win, lose or die. Win, lose or die. Win, lose or die.
And the actual guitar riff is distinctly different, but it's just evokes it absolutely brilliantly. So just give us a bit of background on this track, Reese, if you would.
Well, it's actually a co-write with Mark Holverson, with Boz. He came up with that riff. Yeah, and it was just the two chords. But he had the ding, 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 ding. And I thought, oh, I just said Bond to me straight away. And I added the third chord to give it a blues progression, which he wasn't very happy with that, actually. We've never really agreed on that. It should be on our new album. But it just shouted Bond to me, so I doubled up that. I played it underneath to give it a more Bondy kind of sound on the guitar, so I basically copied the riff. Because, you know, with Boz, it would have been distorted. So I got a kind of cleaner riff, and I thought, right, I want to see whether I can write a Bond track. Because I really liked What's-Her-Face's Skyfall, Adele. I thought that was proper Bond track. And I thought I would try and sort of recreate that kind of sense of Bond. I just thought to see if I could do it, really. It's a sound design job more than a music job. As far as I'm concerned, it's making it sound like it's a Bond song.
Well, just to say that the reverb does so much to recreate that sound, especially on the guitar.
Yeah.
But there's an interesting section later on with strings coming in. It's quite orchestral.
Yeah.
But it's still got this overall dark theme, which I think is probably present in most Bond movies.
You must understand, if you read the books, Bond is a sociopathic killer. That's what he is. He's a charming killer. And so those kind of songs are going to be dark, but the kind of the genre, the oeuvre, I suppose, of Bond is always really that guitar sound, strings and brass, all Bond songs, and they all have that du, 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 du riff, which is a riff on the D minor. And so I just copied that kind of progression, and you shove that into any song and it becomes a Bond song. Well, it's true.
It's crazy, Reese. I mean, obviously, this is a great track, and we will be playing the full version on Resonate Radio at some point.
So, yes, that should be a co-write with Boz. Came up with the two chords and that guitar riff, which is the central bit of that song. And then I just the fun I had was doing the production, because there's writing a song and then it's producing the song, and they're different things, and writing the lyrics. I really enjoyed writing the lyrics to try and create that sense of Bond.
Well, but just to say as well, there's a very intriguing outro. Right at the end, there's the hint of another tune which would take you... That caught my ear right at the end.
Yeah, that was a little musical joke, that was. That's the theme to The Saint. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. You know that 60s Saint with Roger Moore? And right at the end, he would look to the camera and a little halo would appear on top of his head and there would be a Glock and a female voice going, do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And so I just shoved that on the end because you know, the Saint and the Bond, they're kind of interwoven, particularly when they're the same actor playing both characters. So I just, you know, I amuse myself. I'm not doing this for anybody yet, really, than my mates and myself. I'm not looking to sort of sell anything, God knows. So that was just a bit of a musical joke.
Okay, well, I'm very pleased to catch that one.
Well done on that, by the way, Tim. I'm thumbs up on that. I'm impressed that you noticed that.
Some of these tracks are quite nice and long, Greece. Yeah. They're not your sort of two minute wonders. But let's check out another track, shall we? How about, can we have a bit of info on Across the Factory Floor?
Okay, well, Across the Factory Floor is a song that happened by accident. I produce a podcast, an academic podcast called Modernist Conversations, which literally tens of academics will listen to. It's a very niche thing. I write the music and I record it and I edit it down into the final programme. And so I said, well, what kind of music do you want, Chris? And he said, oh, let's have a rumba. So I went online and I found out what the hell a bloody rumba was. And that's sort of what got me into thinking that I could write that commercial music again. So I did this rumba track. So for season two, there has to be modernism. And modernism is basically 20th century music and art. So I thought, why don't I do something Warholian, you know, like the Exploding Plastic Inevitable. So that took me to the Velvet Underground. And so I wrote a chorus. I just did the la, 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 la bits. I just did that and I just thought, that'll just be a chorus. I can bed that under for the introduction. That'd be great. It'll be a different theme. And then all the lyrics came into my head. You know, I just improvised those lyrics directly into the microphone. Just a tiny little tweak at the end. And then I spent about 2 weeks listening to Velvet Underground and Lou Reed to get the voice. And then I re-recorded the voice. But it didn't turn out Velvets, actually, because I was talking about Andy in the song, Andy Warhol. And the album about Andy Warhol is Transformer. He's singing about Andy all the time, Andy's chest and vicious and all of that kind of stuff. And that's why I put the sort of the David Bowie bong, bong, bongs bit in the middle to make it a bit more Transformer and less kind of Velvet Underground. So that's the story behind it. It was an accident and it turned out to be one of my better songs, again, which annoys me because I wasn't trying hard to make a really good song. It was just something I just dashed off. I think there's a lesson to be learned there, I think.
Upon a desolate shore, I've been out of action, so I'm hungry for more. I'm just strolling across the factory floor. Hipster girls gaze with a confected malaise. Too many cooks. This is the kind of scene that does not smell quite as good as it looks. No, no, and it looks so fine. You ended my orbit through this deadlocked door. Disgusting your body language, yet wanting so much more. You tore off your Furstenberg blouse. I smeared your face. Stop shop hawking a pad of physical grace. Snapping, scrapping, throw me away. Create a working notion for your monochrome day. Betray me, dismay me, deflect me from sin. Persuade me you are better than the state you are in. Oh baby, and I won't walk. Thank you. and he's reflective. He has nothing to say. As Valerie draws her piece and it changes his day. Ooh, jazz in a bookstore, stroke that sculpted velour, catching your eye across this CD decor. Hipster boys share with a devil may care. By hook and by crook, we are the kind of dish that does not taste quite as good as we look. No, no, but we look real fine, gazing at you across the factory floor.
Excellent. What a fantastic track.
Thanks very much, Tim.
Hey, well, listen, I mean, there's that track in particular, I just think you nailed the vocals, man. I thought it was like, I thought it was from Transformer, a track I've missed.
Yeah, a bonus one from the vaults, maybe.
Well, I mean, it sounds dated, but then it doesn't.
Well, it's supposed to.
Really excellent production. And I mean, you know, I would like to do another session specifically more about sound techniques. But whilst I've got you here,
yeah,
there's an interesting kind of effect that I think you've referred to it as cross panning before.
Right. Yeah.
Could you explain some of that? How do you use those sorts of things on your vocals? How many vocal tracks were on that track with them?
Oh, okay. Well, cross panning is basically panning crossing instruments across the stereo divide. I didn't do anything on that particular track because I wanted it to sound like it was recorded in 1973. There are loads of backing tracks. I think there's probably about 12 tracks of me going la la la. I think for the main vocal, I think I recorded it three times, and then the second recording I kept as the main recording, and then I panned the other two entirely left and right and much lower volume, and that was just to widen the sound and softened it if I went out of tune, because I don't like using auto-tune on vocals because I think it's cheating. No. Unless I'm doing it like Be Still My Broken Heart, where it is a specific effect and designed to be sounding like that. I'm old. I don't like autotune. So three vocal tracks for the main vocal, a centre one, and then two panned left and right, much quieter, and then a load of la-la-las and then bong, 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 which I then sampled, because I had about 12 tracks. I just basically mixed that on its own, and then I chopped them up and I put them into the sampler so I could just trigger them when I wanted to. Well, no, all the la-la-las and the bong-bong-bongs, they're all actually triggered by a sampler. I recorded them all and then bounced them down, and then I inputted that into a sampler so it could trigger it. Instead of having to record across the whole song, I could just do it one time and then trigger it for all the verses and choruses.
So, yeah, like the la-la...
The la-la's, yeah. And the bong-bong-bong for the sort of chorusy bit. So, which is my homage to David Bowie, who produced Transformer, and you know, it's much a Bowie album, really, because of that. You know, that's why it's his best album. It just sounds brilliant, even today. It just sounds fantastic. It helped that you had Herbie Flowers playing bass. That probably helped a bit.
Well, I mean, just to add that, I mean, I presume that you play the guitars on this track as well as the bass?
Yeah, I play everything. I program the drums, which I play live using a keyboard. It's a funny thing. Back in the 90s when I had an Atari 1040 ST microcomputer and a sound canvas, I spent ages trying to make instruments, you know, fake instruments sound real, and I'd have orchestras and all that kind of stuff. And now I can do all that easily. I just want real acoustic instruments. So I tend to just play in the bass and play in the guitars. And not use synths so much, other than kind of dance music. So yeah, it's all acoustic, that is, or the acoustic guitars, the solo, all plugged through my amplifier. I've got a little 5-watt Fender Champ So it's all recorded on that with a really lovely reverb pedal, where I get that nice reverb on the solo electric part. The acoustic guitars were all recorded into a Neumann's 102 TLM, which is the vocal mic that Billie Eilish, is that how you pronounce it? She used for her first album, the one that she recorded in her bedroom with her brother. It's the cheapest Neumann's you can get. My favourite mic is the one that I'm actually recording this interview on, actually, which is an Octava Mark 319, which I bought in 1994, not long after the wall came down. It's an East German microphone. I don't know, it knows me. It knows what I like. It's a bit warmer. So I tend to use that still for vocals and use the Neumanns for everything else, really.
Wow. Well, I mean, I love the clarity on the guitars. I was going to ask about whether they were metal string on the acoustic.
They're steel string acoustics.
Yes. Yeah.
There's about three acoustics or four acoustics on that, just to get that width. Again, one main one, and then others just to add texture and flow. It's quite a monaural stereo mix. I try to have a narrow kind of 10 past 2 kind of. If you're thinking about the pan pots, they would be 10 past 2. So it's quite a narrow stereo rather than a wide stereo, which we're talking about cross-panning. I do that a lot in the dance tracks.
I've got a track here, Chase the Sun.
Yeah. Yeah.
1-2, 1-2, hello, hello. But yes, this is some of the cross-panning we were referring to.
Yeah, a lot of that track is mixed in binaural. Because it's designed to be played either really loudly on sound systems, or with the way that most people listen or receive music now, which is on headphones. And so binaural is a surround sound format that works on headphones. The latest thing is called something called Dolby Atmos, which is the latest big thing. And you can mix in Dolby Atmos on Logic Pro 11 or Pro Tools or anything like that. And when you listen on headphones, it feels like the sound is surrounding you. So I have a 360-degree panner. All the kicks and all the basses and all that kind of stuff are all locked in the middle. That's the kind of the foundation, the roots of the track, if you like. And then all the flowers and the fronds, they're all the synthy, swirly stuff. And I have that moving all the time. It's all about movement in order to create a level of interest, I suppose. Because it's three chords repeated for 7 minutes, essentially, is what that track is, and what most dance tracks are. You know, change of instrumentation, change of movement, moving the sound across the binaural field. It just gives it a certain level of excitement, I suppose. It's always moving, it's always shifting, it's always on a journey to a destination. And the end of that track, the destination are actually air raid sirens. Because I wanted it at that kind of late 90s, early noughties kind of dancing on a beach kind of vibe, which is why I created that shouty bit at the beginning, which was me at the other end of the room shouting and adding a distortion patch, a load of reverb, and then I put a plate reverb across all of the instrumentation there to give it that sense of a live thing, and then put crowd sounds responding to my voice, and then all that cuts, as soon as it gets into the piano, I cut all of that, and it's just the standard track then. But I wanted to create an environment in which this track existed. And then it just goes to the sirens at the end, because I'm a dark-souled creature and I can't be happy too long. And there's always a payoff in the end. Here come the bombs.
Oh, such clean trebles.
Yeah, EQ is very important. You know, I spend a lot of time on getting the EQs right, because if you have too many frequencies that share the same space, it just becomes murky. And I've got some really nice kind of EQ plugins that I've acquired over time, and a few nice synth plugins. So I'm just using old synth sounds, analog synth sounds, you know, pre-FM synthesis, those kind of VCO oscillating kind of 70s, early 80s sounds, which I really like. It gets a little bit prog in the middle, which I did on purpose, really, where there's call and answer stuff and all of that. And I had some distorted guitar power chords, and a bit of guitar strumming and all of that kind of stuff. But I do it because I suppose I used to write country songs when I was blocked. Yeah. So sometimes you get blocked. And for me, it's being blocked is lyrics. I just can't think of anything to write about. And so what I used to do, if I was blocked, I think, right, I'll write a country song. You know, I'm not that fussed about country. So it's just a device in order to get out of my block. I'd never finish the song. An idea would suddenly pop up and I'd be off again. And so I thought, instead of trying to write a country song, because, you know, let's go back to those dance tracks. I had great fun doing it. I can not think as a composer. I can think as a sound designer. And that's what it is. It's sound. I'm designing sound as a progression, as an emotional and musical narrative from the beginning to the end. And I just use it as a different part of my creative brain. And that might help me get back to writing songs again. Though I've been having such fun writing the dance tracks, I've just been doing those. Are you ready for this? We have chased the sun and it has brought us here to this time, to this place. Just improvised, you know, shouting at the back with my microphone in another room.
Well, whipping the crowd up into a frenzy there, yeah.
yes. BBC sound effects crowd, it has to be said. Actually, thinking about it, it might be some sound effects I recorded when I was doing History of Football, which is actually an Old Firm game between Celtic and Rangers in 1995. I think that's what those crowd sounds actually are. But, you know, with sound design, there's one rule. If it reads, it works. If it sounds right, it is right. I'm working on an album now. I thought, what the hell not? I'll just work on a dance album. You know, Chase the Sun's not on Spotify. Only you've got that. I think I might have put it on SoundCloud, which is what I do when I put stuff in that I haven't, you know, it's a kind of a work in progress to get a bit of feedback from, you know, from you and the lads and Stevie Griss and James Hollingsworth of this world. I get a bit of feedback and that helps a little bit. I tell you what, I'm really looking forward to Stevie Griff and James's prog album that you've told me about, because I really enjoyed the Laser Variations that Steve did a couple of years ago. I was talking to Boz about this, and I'm really looking forward to that. So make sure they send me a bloody copy.
Well, I'm just all ears for news either way.
Yeah.
As you say, that will be a fantastic collaboration. Just to say as well, we haven't had time really to go into other tracks. I think it was On the Side, Be Still My Broken Heart, we mentioned I Will Shine, a great sort of jive rock thing. Most of these that we've been talking about are on the 10-track album that you released last year.
Oh yeah, Genre.
Genre,
yeah.
That's on Spotify. And hopefully we'll be able to play a few more of those on Resonate Radio. So keep us posted, Reese. It's been absolutely a chat with you.
I will shine. Just to let you know, sorry to interrupt. I Will Shine was my attempt to write a Nick Lowe song. You know Nick Lowe from Rockpile and Brinsley Schwartz and that kind of stuff? I like his lyrics. I like his approach to lyrics. They're very witty. So I thought I'll try and write the lyrics to I Will Shine as a kind of Nick Lowe kind of homage. So I sorry interrupted you there, but I was listening. No, that's it. I was just so the instrumentation. I wanted to sound a bit like Brinsley Schwartz, that kind of the pub rock band that he was in before he joined up with Rockpile with Swansea's own Terry Williams. Yeah. Him and Billy Bremner and all those guys in Rockpile. So I wanted it to sound like one of his songs from the 70s. Slightly obscure reference, but there we go. Especially for younger listeners. Sorry, younger listeners. I'm very much an analog kind of guy.
thinking about it, it's a very apt name for the album's genre, because you do seem to be able to go from one musical style to another, and as I think we enjoy talking about Win, Lose or Die, which I just think is a style song as much as anything.
Oh, absolutely. It's
very impressive in achievement, so thank you for your time talking about that. I'll just say, looking forward very much to talking with you again, Reese.
Absolutely, whenever you want.
Thank you very much for being part of Rising Star Festival.
You're welcome, and I'm glad to be involved, Tim. Very glad to be involved.